it was the combination of these anxieties, these intrusive thoughts, this hypervigilance, these swirling thoughts, and the fact that I couldn't do anything about them. And then I lost my motivation to do other things, things that made me happy, things that brought me joy. And everything all of a sudden felt hard. Getting up in the morning felt hard. Brushing my teeth felt hard. Making sure that there was food on the table for everyone, not just for my daughter. All of those things just seemed to pile up and pile up and pile up and pile up with no respite.
Hi, welcome to Partners in Upbringing. I'm Kalyani.
I'm Himani.
And we are parents just like you.
Always on a lookout. So come join us in our endeavor as we connect with parenting experts and fellow inspiring parents to know the best practices for raising happy and confident children.
Visit partnersinupbringing.com for podcasts, videos, blogs, and to connect with experts. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Partners in Upbringing.
You can listen to us on your favorite podcasting app, Partners in Upbringing, your trusted partner in your parenting journey.
We all know parenthood comes with its own share of worries, right? From skin knees to teenage drama, there's always something to keep us on the edge. But sometimes that worry morphs into something bigger, something harder to control, anxiety. And let's not forget another silent struggle many of us parents face, depression. It's more than just feeling down sometimes. It's heavy weight that can cloud our days and make it hard to function. The truth is, many of us have grappled these emotions ourselves, and we know we are not alone. Yet these topics often get swept under the rug, leaving parents feeling isolated and confused.
That's why today we are opening up the conversation. We will dig deep into the understanding of anxiety and depression in the context of parenthood. We'll explore coping mechanisms, the role of professionals, and how to build supportive communities. This episode is for all the parents out there who've ever felt lost in the waves of worry or swallowed by the darkness of depression. You're not alone. Join us as we shed light on these challenges and find pathways to brighter days. To do so, we have with us today Jenna Clancy, a mom who has experienced anxiety and depression herself, has faced all the hardships which come with it. And then she has sought help, bounced back. Jenna is based in South Carolina with her husband and a daughter who's now 6. On the career front, she has been a mental health specialist herself. What a combination. So imagine the quality of conversation we are going to have. A special education teacher and has also done fundraising and is now doing a business development and management role with Witten Clancy Partners.
Another interesting aspect about Jenna is that just like me and Himani, she strongly believes that conversations about parenting need to be brought to the forefront. And it is because of this belief that she has also co-authored the book Imperfect Parenting, Honest Stories from Global Parents. Both me and Himani have read this book and we would highly recommend it to all the listeners. The book has 12 superb write-ups from different authors across the globe. And all of them absolutely resonated with us.
Yes, it's a truly wonderful book. It covers many, many different aspects. So there's definitely something for you that will resonate with you. In fact, it also gave me a new perspective and made me rethink about how I am feeling and treating myself in the parenting journey. So if you would like to grab a copy for yourself of Imperfect Parenting, the parenting book, it's available on most of the leading stores, bookstores, as well as on Amazon. So now let's welcome our guest for today, Jenna Clancy. Hi, Jenna. Welcome to Partners in Upbringing podcast. We are excited.
Me as well. So lovely to see you.
Hi, Jenna. Welcome to Partners in Upbringing.
Hi. How are you, ladies?
Oh, lovely, wonderful, and looking forward to this conversation. Thank you for joining us.
Wonderful to be here.
Jenna, we would like to know about your journey right from the start, even before your daughter was born.
Yes. So I think that what I was unaware of was anxiety. Really started when I was young. And then as I continued to get older, I developed these coping mechanisms to help during times when I was feeling anxious. It was things like taking space, pulling back on social obligations, some very simple, easy things that now looking back, I really needed to do to kind of keep myself measured. And from the time that I started during pregnancy and then beyond, my time, my body was no longer my own. And a lot of the things that I really needed to do, I wasn't able to do because I wasn't an autonomous adult. I had a partner, I had a baby, I had all of these things that I felt like needed to keep me on a schedule or keep me moving forward or, all of that. And so it really kind of spiraled into a way that I wasn't expecting.
Could you help us with one or two examples of what were your reactions or why did you feel that anxiety which you felt was different than a regular worry?
How did you feel that you are feeling different than your peers?
Sure. Yeah. We would swap stories and one of the moms said, my child is sleeping 3 to 4 hour stretches now. So it's really helping. I'm sleeping 3 to 4 hours in between feedings. And I was like, my kid is sleeping 3 to 4 hours. I'm not sleeping at all. Or, we would talk about kind of little things here or there, milestones, things like that. And all of the sudden, I wouldn't be able to control my thoughts. Be like, okay, so if she's supposed to be sitting up independently in 6 months, then if she's not doing this by this time, then I'm late. But then I have to do this, but then I have to do this and this and this. And my thoughts would swirl and I would immediately feel like I was a failure. And it was these kind of intrusive thoughts, right? This, I'm going to harm my child because I have not done X, Y, or Z, right? I haven't gotten them to this milestone, so I've done irreparable damage. Or the term hypervigilance kind of came up with my therapist when I wound up finally starting therapy. And I hadn't heard this term before, and it was about a lot of times it happens with PTSD patients that have experienced trauma. But in my experience, it was, I would do something and it would turn out just fine, but I would replay this event over and over and over in my mind and experience the worst case scenario. So I would be in the airport and I would be pushing my baby in a stroller and we would go on an escalator or something and everything would be fine. I would get to the top, we'd go, and then that night my brain would go over and over and over. The baby fell out of the stroller. She fell onto the escalator. Everything was wrong. She got hurt. And that just showed me that my brain went to these awful dark places. And so it was the extremes that I hadn't been feeling before, as opposed to like the nervousness or the worry. It was very extreme. And so that was what clued me in that it was not just a typical anxiety.
Jenna, now that you've given us details about what exactly you felt, I feel this till date. Just yesterday, I was playing with my daughter on the terrace, which doesn't have a fence. I was there, but I was still feeling, what if she falls down? What if something happens? I keep brushing these thoughts out of my mind, but these thoughts, they keep peeking into my head all the time, all the time. And something as simple as, You know, when I'm going out in the evening, we are in a tropical country and there are so many mosquitoes. So if I see a child who is not wearing full clothes, I'm thinking, what if I would have done that to my kids? You know, something as small as this. I have taken full care. I'm carrying a mosquito repellent. I'm still thinking, what if that would have been so bad on my part? How could I not, you know, think forward? So in spite of doing things right, I'm thinking in the opposite direction and troubling myself.
So it is basically, Jenna, what you're trying to say is that, correct me if I'm wrong, the negative thoughts, it's hard to stop them.
Yes. And it was the spiraling.
Yeah. And even if it's quiet in the house and it's time to go to bed, the thoughts still keep on popping in your head.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And they would wake me up in the middle of the night. And it would, exactly like you were saying, Himani, it was if I would see other people, and it, in particular, it happened with my spouse. I would be like, why doesn't he see or think or have these same feelings that I do? Why does he not understand the gravity of the situation? Why doesn't he see that if we don't leave the house by 2 o'clock, which means we're in the car by 1:45, which means our shoes are on, but which means back, which means I've woken up at 6 o'clock. I'm already late. Our entire day is ruined. We're not on our schedule. Everything's going to fall apart. Why doesn't he feel that way? We were raising the same kid. We were in the same house. We have really discussed and thoroughly worked together to talk about parenting and how we want to raise our child. Why do our brains not work the same way? And I think that kind of coupled and put me down that depressive path. It was the combination of these anxieties, these intrusive thoughts, this hypervigilance, these swirling thoughts, and the fact that I couldn't do anything about them. And then I lost my motivation to do other things, things that made me happy, things that brought me joy, and everything all of a sudden felt hard. Getting up in the morning felt hard. Brushing my teeth felt hard. Making sure that there was food on the table for everyone, not just for my daughter. All of those things just seemed to pile up and pile up and pile up and pile up with no respite.
Did you find the answer to the why? Why were you feeling so different? Or you just carried on?
It got to a point where I knew that I couldn't, through sheer force of will, pull myself out of it. My life was different, right? If I had this anxiety before, I was able to do one of any number of things to help kind of pull myself out of it. Mm-hmm. And it was not as severe. Now, I couldn't seem to settle into routine with coping mechanisms that allowed me to pull myself out of it. And so that's when I kind of realized that anxiety, depression, kind of all of this mental health, these hormones, all of this that happened after pregnancy really did change the chemistry of my brain, and that I needed someone or something to help. And that was kind of where I started my journey.
Did you find it yourself, or did somebody point it out to you that you need to seek help?
Great question. My spouse was actually against me seeing a therapist at first. And it was because the way that we were communicating, he was like, you're just going to go and talk to this person about all the things that I do wrong, and I don't help, I don't do this, I don't do that, and didn't realize how much I needed to be in control of my own self, that it was things that I needed to help me. It was not just a way to vent. It's different than chatting with a girlfriend and being like, oh, he forgot to take the trash out again. I can't believe I have to remind him to do everything. It was different. It was truly figuring out a way to help myself in these times when I felt like I was out of control. So I was the one that pushed for it.
If you are enjoying this conversation, Please subscribe to us and give us a 5-star rating on the platform you're listening to. Thank you.
I had set off any number of postpartum depression radars. You know, you could take a test online, answer a questionnaire. Your OBGYN gives you a questionnaire when you come back for your visits. And every time she was like, oof, yeah, I think what you're feeling is not great. You should probably, you know, write in a journal or go talk to someone. So it was suggested to me that what I was feeling was not typical. But it really took for me to come to that conclusion on my own that I needed help outside of myself.
So you being a mental health professional yourself helped you understand what you're going through. And that's why you advocated that, you know, you should take the right steps and go seek help. But for normal people who do not have this kind of a background, would it be right to say that when you are feeling extreme emotions about something which has not really happened, in the anticipation that something might go wrong, and you are just sucked into those thoughts, is something that you need to watch out on?
Yeah, I think it's the severity.
And then hyper reaction to someone who's not, to your partner or your, you know, mom, if your mom is helping you with the,
or even
you
to know, your child,
your post delivery, yes, or your child is feeling that you have an extreme reaction towards something.
Yes,
it was. Which is not even there, which is not even real. Then that is a sign that you have to look out for as a parent to know that you are, where you are heading. Are you heading towards severe anxiety?
Yes. The rage.
Is that right?
Yeah. The rage was a piece that I was not expecting either. I like to consider myself a happy person, a jovial person, an energetic person. I was not that person. I was just not that person.
But Jenna, this has nothing to do with the, you know, if you are a serious person or a jovial person, right? Absolutely. This is just some other part of you which is operating at that time.
Yes. And it was the snap that would happen.
Correct. Correct.
That it was, everything was fine, everything was fine, everything was fine. The milk spilled on the floor.
I feel suddenly a hole in my stomach, you know.
Jenna, could you tell us a little bit more about the online tests? Are they easily and freely available?
Yes. There are a lot of different places, a lot of different sites that you can look up, again, based on where you are in the world. Psychology Today in the U.S. can point you in the right direction, but really just a quick Google search, you know, postpartum anxiety and depression calculator or something of that nature will always point you in the right direction. Mental health hotlines, a place that you could call that has, you know, someone that will answer the phone 24 hours a day. And you can even discuss with that person, hey, here's something that I'm feeling. I think it might be this. Before I go into crisis, can you point me in the direction of some help or somewhere that I can get some more information? So all of those things can absolutely be a guideline and be help.
Jenna, how did you progress to depression? Had you started treating yourself before that, or, you know, it happened even while you were aware of the anxieties?
Yeah, I think that one of the reasons why I wanted to tell my story was that even as a mental health professional in a past life, even as someone that is so aware of what parents and mothers can experience, I wasn't giving myself the same grace that I would give or the same advice that I would give to another mom. I was convinced that I was immune. I was convinced that I knew what I was doing. I could figure it out on my own. And the depression piece, the not wanting to get up and get dressed, the not really wanting to do any of the things that I previously enjoyed, that piece kind of came along with it. for me, it's the anxieties that cause the depression. For some people, it's I think the depression that causes some anxieties, that they are not doing a lot of the hygiene things that they should be doing, and that causes some social anxiety, because then when they do go out, oh, I haven't washed my hair or changed my clothes or any of that. For me, I was a little bit of the opposite. My anxieties took over, and I didn't want you to see that there was something wrong. So if and when I did go out, I was always dressed perfectly. I was had hair and makeup done. That perfectionist took over, that I had to outwardly present that everything was great, everything was fine, everything was perfect, when inside it was a way of covering up the feelings and the lack of control.
Jenna, this is slightly not, you know, slightly off, but would you say, as a mental health professional, that the experiences that you have during, you know, post your delivery, post you being a parent, are very much rooted in your childhood?
So I'm going to put up the disclaimer, not a currently practicing mental health specialist, do not have a degree in mental health. So this is my opinion in working in the field. But a lot of times, a lot of parents, a lot of what happened during their childhood comes to light again, and they see a lot of the same issues, or they start to think deeper about how they were raised in their childhood, as you're thinking about how you're going to parent your own children, right? Mm. Did you grow up in a house with a lot of yelling versus not yelling? Were you always sent a timeout? Were you always grounded? Things like that. And do you want to parent the same way? Do you want to parent with some of that types of thing? Or do you want to go in an opposite direction? We have a lot more access to information now. All of these different things that, you know, you try and do and try and think about when you are parenting your own child makes you think back on your own childhood. And it was interesting. I had a conversation with my mom, and she said, you know, I just wanted to do everything right for you. And I said, you did absolutely everything you could based on the information that you had. Mm. You cannot be hard on yourself for information that you didn't know, right? If you didn't know, you didn't know. We didn't know that you weren't supposed to put juice in bottles to give to kids because it was going to rot their teeth. They didn't know. Now you know. Now you know not to put blankets and pillows in a crib with the baby when they're an infant, when they can't turn their head. We know. So all of these things that you continue to learn and we continue to get access to, I think that also helps in terms of from your own childhood.
Jenna, just going back to the point where you mentioned that the barriers to actually seek help are far higher than we might imagine. Now, because you could little bit diagnose it yourself, maybe you could cross that barrier and seek help. But otherwise, the first place we might go if we are not feeling ourselves or feeling some problem is friends. And are friends really able to help? I am not sure how many of them would be. The second place would be Google, which might just make it worse sometimes. But if, as a parent or as an individual, we are feeling stuck, what would be your thoughts on that?
There are mom groups. Mm-hmm. There are classes where you can find parents with children of similar ages. Because I think that was a difficulty for me that I wasn't expecting, that just because I had friends that had children, just because I had taken care of children, doesn't mean that they were in the same stage of life that I was in, the same season of life. And I would ask questions of friends that had older children, and it almost seemed as if they had, you know, come out the other side. And I was waiting to come out the other side, right? Everything is a season. Everything's a stage, right? I was talking to a neighbor and she just had the most beautiful plants outside of her house. Mm-hmm. The entire front of her house was gorgeous. I was like, how do you have the time and the energy and the effort to put into it? And she said, I've got two children that can entertain themselves and I know don't need me every 2 minutes of the day. You don't. I love taking care of my plants. I love the way it looks. It makes me feel good. I'm now in a season of life where I can put time and energy into this. So it's kind of about finding people that are in the same stage of life that you're at to commiserate with sometimes, but also to compare.
Mm-hmm. I think if as a friend we come across somebody who tells us they're not feeling great, the first thing which we might do is, hey, come on, that's not you. It'll be fine. You just need a small break. And why don't you meditate maybe for some time? Why don't you take a day out? But these things, though, are the first things to be done, may or may not always help. So I think as individuals, moms and parents, we need to help people be more open to jump the barrier and seek professional help as well.
Absolutely.
I'm even for the Indian setup, you know, the first people whom we go to, maybe after friends, is our own parents. And because, like you rightly said, there was no awareness, they tend to dismiss it.
Mm-hmm.
They will just say, are you mad? No one feels like that. Shut up. Or keep quiet. Or just sleep, you'll feel better.
Eat well, rest well.
Rest well, eat well. Look at your child. What are you seeing? Such a cute face. How can you even feel like this? So knowing that all these things are not helping you, at least the third thing should be that you go and seek a professional help.
Yes.
And speak with your friends, you speak with your parents. Not helping, go for it.
Yeah. And I have to say, one of the most valuable lessons I learned in therapy is the value of rest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not necessarily going to take a nap. Yes, obviously there is physical rest, but the mental rest that needs to happen every day for the person, the default parent, the person that carries the mental load. Always think about, you know, in this day and age, right, you have so many tabs open on your computer and you feel like they're constantly spinning. So many things to remember. For school, for this, for the vacation, does my kid have the right size shoes? Do I need to order things for the summer camps? All of the things that are constantly swirling in your head, you need to be able to take a rest from that. And so one of the things that my therapist said is, you know, picture the plates spinning, right, on the poles, right, like you've seen in the circus. And some of the plates are glass and some of them are plastic. The really important ones, the glass ones, keep them spinning, right? Make sure your kids are fed. Make sure they're in clean clothes. They're sleeping at night. The plastic ones, oh, shoot, I forgot to send in the paper that the school needed for that day. Okay, it will go in tomorrow, you know?
Mm.
Oh, I forgot their socks to go with their new shoes to go. It's okay. We'll change it for tomorrow. Some of those things have to be able to fall without you feeling like the world has fallen. Mm. And so that mental rest, that permission to allow some of those things. I signed up for my kids to have clean clothes. I did not sign up for them to never have a dirty clothes. I did not sign up for them to never have dirty clothes. Yes, they always have clean clothes. There's going to be dirty clothes. And so the value of, I'm going to put this aside. It's not serving me. I'm going to take my mental rest. It's going to happen tomorrow. That permission.
Is there any tool which you can suggest that, you know, people can, or mothers, parents can directly, quickly seek or, you know, take help of for the mental rest?
I'm a list maker. However you choose to make lists, I like paper lists. I like the feeling of crossing them off. Some people do them digitally. Some people use their emails.
Same pinch.
Absolutely. So for me, when I was really struggling, I would make my lists and I would put things on there like brush teeth. I would put things on there like take a shower, change clothes. And you look at your list, and I used to do it before bed, right, for the next day or the next few days. And you make your list of things that need to happen. And I would put stars next to the things that were absolute necessities, right? Mm. I have to bring my kid to her doctor's appointment tomorrow. That is not an option. She has an appointment. We have to go. Do I have to do the load of extra sheets? No. That can happen the day after or the day after that. So I used to prioritize my to-do list, and I used to do it before I went to bed the night before so that I wouldn't wake up in the middle of the night thinking, oh, did I forget to do this? Oh, did I remember to write it down? Oh. And so for me, it was allowing my brain to download and to have that list to prioritize which are the glass plates and which are the plastic ones.
That's a very practical input. Thanks for that. What helped me was, even though we have a long list to do, and if I know that my child is coming back at, say, 2 p.m. from school, I used to stop doing everything at least 10 minutes before and not doing stuff till the last minute, till the doorbell rings. So having that pause for 10 minutes, just sitting and doing nothing, really, really worked for me.
I remember you sharing this with me.
I'm also very lucky. We go to our neighborhood. My daughter goes to our neighborhood school. We walk in the morning to school, and I walk to go get her in the afternoon. There, some of the days when I feel like I've been going and doing, and I need that pause, that rest, I will not take a ride. I won't jump on with a friend. I won't make a phone call as I'm walking. I will just walk in silence. Mm-hmm. And that for me is a really great reset, especially when you walk up to an elementary school with kids running everywhere and jumping, screaming. It's a really great way for me to feel centered and ready for the next phase of the day when my daughter comes home, to switch to mom mode from doing and going mode.
Jenna, we would like to know more about your therapy sessions, and we believe that you also sought help from medication to control anxiety and depression.
So for me, the switch happened when I was no longer making any forward progress in therapy. I wasn't moving backward. But I knew that there was something that needed to happen in addition. And the way that my psychiatrist explained it was, it wasn't going to take the anxiety away. It was just going to round out the sharp edges. So some of the things that felt excruciatingly hard, sure, might still be hard, but they would be surmountable. And what it did kind of almost right away was a lot of those kind of depressive tendencies started to really, really ease. The things that weren't really hard, getting up and brushing teeth and getting dressed and, you know, all of those self-care bits didn't seem hard anymore. By the time I got to needing to be flexible, my child's school called, they're sick, they had to come home. That's a disruption to your day. That was something that would have completely derailed me before. Now it was a, okay, let's do what we've got to do. Let's move into flexibility mode and let's handle it. I felt like myself. I felt like I could handle things that even 2 weeks prior, I would have totally made me fall apart. I was nervous to start the medication. Again, even being in the mental health world, I would never have ever told anyone who felt like they needed medication to not do it. And yet I was so hesitant, so hesitant.
The biggest hesitation, I think, which comes with starting medication is A, will it have any side effects? And B, will I able to stop it once I feel better? So what was the experience there?
Side effects for me, I also had a vanity piece. I was nervous. A lot of them talk about weight gain, which is something that I was very nervous about. Dependency, if I wanted to get pregnant again, would this be something that I could stay on, or was there a weaning period? But for me, it was the benefits really were going to outweigh any potential costs. And I was specific that I wanted to start on the lowest dose and see how it went from there. I am still on the lowest dose. I have not changed medications. And so I think that for me, it really was a great success. I know you can ask a lot of the people in my life and they will say the same. That I just seem to sort of come back to me, which was really what I was looking for. The anxiety had taken over and I wasn't myself anymore.
Wow. So if you had an analogy, like if we have fever, we pop a medicine or a paracetamol, it's similar to that. We have an issue. So there's no harm and no shame in going for medication.
Absolutely. In the same way, if there was someone that had a sore wrist, you wouldn't tell them not to go to the doctor to get it checked out, right? Same if there you think that there's something going on in your brain. You wouldn't tell someone who has a broken leg not to go see a doctor. And it's taken a long time for people to kind of come to that understanding or see it in that way, especially the generation that raised us. Exactly. Yes. Like you said, you can do it. Just push through. It's fine.
Exactly.
You'll be fine.
Now, when you sit back and if you had to think that if I had not taken the right steps to get myself out of this anxiety and the depression, you know, swirl, what effect, what would have my family had to go through? My daughter, my husband, my whole marriage. So what do you think? What would you say about that?
I think that was one of my main reasons for seeking help in the first place. I wanted better for my daughter. I wanted better for my marriage. I wanted better for myself. I knew that what was happening was not good and I wanted better. I think a lot of times as moms, as parents, we're willing to do anything for our kids, but not, but when it comes to our own selves, that's when we take pause. For me, this was not a selfish act. This was very much aimed towards the betterment of things for my daughter and for my family. I knew that I couldn't let things continue to go as they were.
That's a very, very crucial point because we tend to believe that we are hiding it, masking it, not breaking down in front of our child, not sharing how we are feeling in front of them. But the children finally are getting affected. They can read through or they are not getting the best their parent can be for them.
So, and you're also rifting apart, going far from your partner. Right in the process, because they're not able to relate to a fellow parent, a co-parent anymore.
Yes.
So now that we are talking about this, there are so many instances that I'm getting reminded of. And I'm sure these are the instances that we should think of and not something really big to know what's happening to us.
Yes.
Because these small things pile up and become that one big, you know, storm.
Yes. And I think to your point, it's the frequency and the longevity of it that gave me pause.
The intensity as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Jenna, you mentioned some time ago about reaching out to different moms or different communities around you. And I believe you got a lot of strength from a book reading club with your friend. So could you tell us more about that?
Yes. So I have a roommate from college, one of my co-authors in this book, Denise. She writes a chapter in our book as well. And she adjusted her working environment and has started this amazing community of readers called the Connected Reader. And the way that she speaks about reading, and again, she has known me through all seasons of my life. We met when we were 18, and we are now not 18 anymore. So our young 20s, becoming professionals, becoming partners, becoming parents. And so she knows me incredibly well and knew how much I loved reading. And I am no longer embarrassed to say that I have not done a lot of reading since my daughter was born. Certainly not reading for pleasure. And Denise, the way that she talks about reading and shares how she reads, you know, everyone thinks that to read all of these books and that you have to sit in a quiet room with a book and, you know, dedicate an hour. Denise very often shows that her kids are playing games on the floor, her other daughter's doing homework, and she's sitting with a book. She brings a book everywhere she goes, 10 minutes a day, audiobooks, on a device, in the library, all of these different wonderful ways that you can kind of consume literature, exploring a new genre. But I've just loved hearing and connecting with that piece of myself again.
I think reading is extremely empowering in the way that the part of our brain, which is beyond parenting, is also getting the food which it wants. And that in turn keeps us more happy. And I really like what you mentioned about it might be just 5 minutes, 10 minutes, doesn't matter, but still we being able to do it along with all the other chores.
Yeah. And it's allowing you talk about the mental rest, allowing your brain to turn off on what's going on in your life and turn on right. to another piece.
Yes. So to all the listeners who would like to explore this, we are going to share the handle, the Connected Reader to Genesis Club, in our show notes. So you can have a look and join that as well.
And of course, you'll be finding the link to Imperfect Parenting book in our show notes, as well as in our post or links on social media. So do grab a copy for yourself and enjoy your parenting journey. Happy parenting to all of you.
Jenna, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your journey, which has been difficult, yet you are able to find strength which was hidden somewhere in you and bounce back. So thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you for being so courageous.
Yes.
Absolutely. And coming out and sharing it with everyone.
And I,
after speaking with you, I realized that some bits of my journey were related to anxiety. So thank you for, you know, absolutely. I'm sure a lot of, after listening to this episode, so many of us would understand what they went through or maybe are going.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Jenna, for joining
us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Before signing off, we have a small request. If you like what we do, please subscribe to us on the app you're listening to, give us a 5-star rating, and drop us a review. Your small actions make a big difference to us. Please do share our podcast with your friends and family to help them raise happy and confident children. If you'd like to know more about Partners in Upbringing, do visit our website, partnersinupbringing.com. We also conduct parenting webinars with experts. So if you would like to organize one exclusively for your school or organization, do drop us a message on Facebook or Instagram at Partners in Upbringing, or you can email us on contact@partnersinupbringing.com. We would love to hear from you. If you have a feedback or a comment or a suggestion, or if you would like us to cover a particular topic on the podcast, please do write to us. Meet you again in the next episode of Partners in Upbringing with another topic and a new expert or an inspiring parent. Until then, goodbye, stay safe, and happy parenting. The content of this podcast is the copyright of the makers of this podcast, Partners in Upbringing. The information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only, and any reliance on the information provided in this podcast is done at your own risk. This podcast should not be considered as professional advice unless stated. Please refer to https://www.partnersinupbringing.com for further details.